Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up at 11:30, that's just a couple of minutes from now, President Obama is holding a news conference. He hasn't done many of these. It's an anything-goes open mic to take reporter questions. I think presidents do fewer and fewer of these over time. But likely on the agenda today will be the debt ceiling negotiations. And that's the main reason that we're going to be taking some of it once the president starts. Also, the wars in Libya and Afghanistan. Maybe gay marriage. We'll be listening in at 11:30 or a few minutes afterwards after we talk to Bob Lutz, former GM executive, and Melinda Henneberger from Politics Daily will join us. We will be streaming live video as well as audio of the president's news conference in full at our politics website. It's a free country. org. And right now we're asking on Twitter, what would you ask the president? If President Obama pointed his finger at you and you got the first question, what would it be? Tweet us at Brian Lehrer using the hashtag AskThePrez, Prez with a Z, the hashtag AskThePrez. We'll read some of your highlight questions on the air coming up in a few minutes. But now back to the economy, specifically electric cars and corporate culture. With one of the most important leaders in the auto industry in any of our lifetimes. As vice chair of General Motors from 2001 to 2010, he championed the Chevy Volt electric car. He has also held senior leadership positions at Ford and Chrysler in his 47-year career. And he has a new book called Car Guys versus Bean Counters, The Battle for the Soul of American Business, in which he argues that the number crunchers are destroying business, which should be more controlled by people who care about their products. Bob Lutz, I appreciate you coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
You helped preside over the decline and fall of General Motors, ending in the government bailout. How much do you blame the rise of bean counters over car guys?
Well, it's, you know, like most catastrophes, there are multiple causes. Certainly the management orientation that set in about the 1970s, I think driven by the way we teach business as a science in our business schools, was a major contributor. There were other things, too, like the dollar-yen exchange rate and government regulation and so forth. But I think management with more of a focus on the customer and on excellence would have prevented most of it.
Specifically as you can, do you think you could identify two decisions that GM would do over differently from the last 10 years if you had that opportunity?
Well, no, because most of the big decisions were very wisely taken. For instance, making a major investment in China, you know, Rick Wagner doesn't get enough credit for that. And buying Daewoo, certainly a defunct South Korean car manufacturer, that turned out to be a stroke of brilliance. I suppose going back to about 1998, looking back, I suppose the company, or was it, no, it was 89, when that wage contract was concluded that basically gave the UAW those almost unlimited health care benefits, and that was a burden that was, with the rise in health care costs, that burden was just not supportable. That was fatal. And I suppose if we had known then how health care costs were going to develop, none of the companies would have ever said yes to that.
So on that point, what do you think about Obama-style health reform? The supporters say this should help companies like GM compete in the global marketplace because the companies you're competing against from other industrialized countries all have national health systems, which means the burden doesn't fall on the company through union benefits contracts.
That statement is correct. So, that is one reason for a national health care system is that it really, really does help the competitiveness of industry. On the other hand, having participated in British national health for 7 years that I lived in the United Kingdom, I have to say that is about the only thing I could say for it. But, you know, other countries have a blended system where some of it is, there's a minimum level of, say, government-supported, government-mandated health care like in Switzerland, and yet anybody who wants to has access to private physicians. And somehow, you know, there are countries that seem to make it work to where there's a minimum of care that the burden doesn't fall on industries, and yet they maintain a private health care system.
You wrote that in the last 30 years, the American business sector went into the IQ accumulation business.
Yeah.
Is having a high IQ in your leadership a bad thing? You want stupid people?
No, you can't. Well, I mean, you know, you're going to extremes to make a point. But one thing is for sure, I have seen incredibly, incredibly intelligent people who are intellectually brilliant and really gifted analytically. I see them make very, very stupid very stupid decisions because they won't accept the obvious. And a lot of times in business, the solution is obvious. But these brilliant people say, well, they hired me. I'm brilliant. It can't be this easy. So let's find layers of meaning in all this. And maybe the obvious solution isn't the right solution. And they go into all kinds of analytical do loops. Waste a bunch of time and frequently come out with the wrong decision. So as I used to say at Chrysler, I said, when I was president there and we heard about all this stuff GM was doing, I used to say, you know, I have both good news and bad news. The bad news is that the average guy at GM has 20 points more IQ than the average guy at Chrysler, but I got to tell you, that's also the good news.
Bob Lutz, legendary auto executive, my guest on WNYC. His new book, Car Guys versus Bean Counters, The Battle for the Soul of American Business. After the bailout, do you think GM is fundamentally different and fundamentally better today than it was before?
Oh, yeah. I mean, GM was always, in terms of technological capability, always a fabulous company. GM can do technically stuff that no other car company can do, and that's as proven by the Chevrolet Volt. The trouble is it was frequently not called for or not wanted because the solution might be too expensive. And I think now with the clean balance sheet, the absence of debt, a new UAW agreement, somewhat lower wage rates that are now competitive, a radically different dollar-yen relationship to where the Japanese are all screaming now that they can no longer compete in the U.S. market because their costs expressed in dollars are too high. All of these things mean that the playing field is now absolutely level. And the new management at all three companies is totally focused on excellence. And from what I hear inside GM, it's a far less bureaucratic nightmare than it used to be. Decisions get made fast, and they get made logically.
New York Times economics columnist Joe Nocera gave you and the Chevy Volt a great shout-out in his column on Saturday. I'm sure you saw it. He said the Volt may be the future of electric cars because it runs on battery unless the charge wears out, then switches automatically to gasoline power, and that removes the so-called range anxiety that consumers feel with other electric cars where they're stuck if they can't get a recharge.
Right.
Are you bullish on the Volt and for that reason?
Yeah, I'm bullish on that technology. Unfortunately, it's expensive because you've basically got a battery-powered car and a gasoline engine, so you've got more parts. But it is still, if you want to drive electrically, having that range extender engine is the only practical solution. And with the government mandates or the probable government mandates for fuel economy by 2025, that solution is going to have to be adopted by far more manufacturers and on far more vehicles if we're going to meet the federal requirements.
I think the Volt sells for about $40,000. Is that right?
Yeah, 40 and up. But there's a $7,500 tax credit, which I always remind the right-wing talk show host was enacted by the Bush administration.
Do you think in general that selective tax credits, or let's say as the economy slumps again after, you know, starting to move more toward recovery, that selected government stimulus programs would be a good thing to do?
Well, I don't like government stimulus programs because a central entity makes the decision on where the money is spent. If you're going to stimulate, I think tax rates or tax cuts for individuals, which as far as the Treasury is concerned, amount to exactly the same thing. But if you cut taxes on individuals, the individuals will decide how they're going to spend the money. And that provides a real market stimulus. The government deciding that they're going to put $10 billion into youth recreation facilities in America's urban centers may be a socially noble thing to do, but it has no stimulating effect on the economy whatsoever.
On the vote, expensive, as you say, but consumer electronics tend to come down in price almost invariably. So
Yeah. We're
headed for a time, maybe I would guess, where battery technology is going to become cheap enough. And if that happens, do you envision an America with all electric cars?
No, I don't, because the range is always going to be a factor. And don't forget that one of the reasons electronic products get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper is because of ongoing miniaturization. You know, everything constantly gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and you're using less and less material. And that's why Moore's Law doesn't apply to cars, because cars are always going to be the same size, same weight, and consume the same amount of materials.
We're almost out of time. We're going to go listen to the beginning of President Obama's news conference, where we think he's going to talk mostly about the economy. But let's see. We have a listener posted on our comments page. George from Brooklyn says, please ask Bob Lutz about the time he flipped over an Opel during a J-turn. Did you do that?
Yes, I did.
How did that happen?
Oh, there was an argument with the engineers who claimed that the car couldn't be flipped because we had some reports of the car flipping over in the United States. And I went out and performed the test and promptly put it on its roof.
What do you drive today?
Cadillac CTS wagon and a Chevy Tahoe.
Why those?
Oh, the Tahoe is, you know, if you have to move stuff and dogs and several family members and you have to tow the odd boat or horse trailers, there's nothing like a large SUV. And the Cadillac CTS wagon, because it's just a wonderful car. And it has the spaciousness of a wagon. And again, it's partly a dog issue.
Former auto exec, and there's always the dog issue. Bob Lutz, author now of Car Guys versus Bean Counters, The Battle for the Soul of American Business. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming back in a minute, we will listen in on a little bit of President Obama's news conference. We'll see if he's making debt ceiling news here with some kind of deal, who knows, on taxes and spending, and why else he has called the reporters together. These don't happen very much, where a president anymore goes in front of reporters and just takes whatever questions come. So we'll be listening to a little bit of this and talk with Melinda Henneberger from Time about what it means. Stay with us.